සවස්නේ උදේට තනගෙන සමෙන් කහගෙන යනකොට තනගන් සබාවක තනගෙන ආවෝදවසෝ කතුන්ජෝනිතේ ගිරු නොරාදු සසමෝයෙ පිටු ජේසන් සරාතෝන් කියවගෙන ගස්කෙන් ඉන්නවා ඒ ස්ටජින් සාන නබයකෝන් හත්රෙන් කියනවා It's important to, for people to know the participation of groups like Mighty Watch in the efforts of indigenous peoples around the world, actually, in a fight against the exploitation of our resources. In Canada, as you know, Stephen Harper, hopefully I'll be able to say the former Prime Minister of Canada, in 2008 said, colonization did not happen in Canada. There's no colonization in Canada. So this is the kind of people and attitude that we are up against. And it's important to note that Kanasubagi doesn't have your typical protected reserve status. Kanasubagi is considered crown land, which means it belongs to the Queen, first of all. And Canada and her representatives are there to make sure that they oversee how that land is used. The people of Kanasubagi have been contesting any kind of application of any foreign sovereignty upon our soil for over 300 years. I know that I've said this many, many times. And I'm kind of wondering when I have to stop saying it, but every time there's a new government, we have sent letters to them saying that we own this land. We're not just stewards. It's a nice flowery expression to say, oh, Native people, you're the stewards of the land, and you live off the land, and you're so good, and you respect nature. It's nice to make flowery speeches like that, but when it comes down to it, it's more than just that. We're not just stewards of the land. We are protectors of the land. We're protectors of the resources, not just for us, but the ones that the animals use, including the waters. When we do Mohanto Karibadeka, the words that are said before Allah's, in any of our meetings, we are reminded of all the things that give us life, all the things that we need to live a good quality of life here on earth. So we're not just stewards of the land. We are protectors of it. And the illegal application of Canada's sovereignty on our land has always been an issue for us. And that's why, and it's always a contentious issue, of course, as you know. But that's why I am so happy that this time around in our fight, that we are joined, maybe not always willingly, but we are joined by the farmers, the local farmers in the area, the citizens of Oka, the citizens of Saint-Placide, Saint-Isidore, De Montagne, and all the other ones that were mentioned by Walter. Because when we clear away the BS of the rhetoric, at the end of the day, the things that we want most, not just for us and for our children, but for future generations, is that they are going to be able to walk on the land and they are going to be able to see the beautiful birds, the beautiful animals that live off the environment as we are seeing today in 2011. In 50 years' time, that they will be able to see this. In 100 years' time, they will be able to see these beautiful creatures that have graced this earth for centuries. When Canada says to us that we do not have the right, we have to claim our land. It's a process that has been one-sided. It's an archaic way of dealing with Indigenous people. It has nothing to do with reconciliation whatsoever. We have to prove occupancy of our land from time immemorial. How many of you can prove that your ancestors have been here time immemorial? How many of you have ancestry from other places? How many of you here? Don't be shy. You shouldn't be ashamed to say you have ancestry from somewhere else. And I am not ashamed to say that my ancestry is from here. I am a Turtle Clan woman. And my village, Tanasadage, is a Turtle Clan village. I have the obligation. I can sit at home and play Nintendo or be on the computer all day. But I would be denying, and I would be shirking my responsibility as a Longhouse person and as a Turtle Clan person of trying not, at least attempting, to protect the environment. I remember once speaking to a group of high school students and there was some young men sitting in the front row and they had their arms folded listening to us. And when it came to question and answer period, they said, well, why don't you just go to court? This is all BS what you're telling us. You can go to court and get your land back legally. Well, how much money does it cost to go to court? How much money does it cost to pay for lawyers who take an oath to the Queen? And who must uphold the laws of the land. They're not upholding the laws of my people. They're upholding the laws of the land. And how much does it cost to just simply sit down and talk? When they're talking about land claims, there are three different kinds of land claims. There's specific land claims, there are comprehensive land claims, and I can give you all the speeches about the different kinds of land claims. But the key ingredient, and I think it's probably the main concern of any crown actor, which is the federal government, provincial government, municipal government, is what are the economic consequences of not settling a land claim? How many private third-party interests will have to be delayed because of a land claim? Right? So the government says, make one. Make a land claim. In the meantime, you know what we're going to do, just for fun, but you know, you'll get some benefits from this later. We're going to allow this mining company over here to start, they're just going to start a little process right now. And in the end, when we sell our land claims process with you all, you'll gain some economic benefit. Because it hurts us more, it's basically what they're saying, it hurts us more not to allow this development to happen. Your land claims can wait. But we have been waiting 300 years in Tanasadage for a settlement of any kind. And I looked on the internet today. There's a site called The History of Quebec. It's in French, it's spelled Quebec. And it said, Tanasadage was settled by Christian Indians, Christian Mohawks and Nipissings and Algonquins, brought there by the Sulpician priests. Well, they were brought there in the dead of winter. Who in their right mind moves a village in the dead of winter without knowing that there's going to be something on the other side waiting for them? Well, Tanasadage is an old community. It is mentioned in the condolence rite of a chief because Tanasadage, when the Ganawida was going around, making the Great Law of Peace and having all the nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, the American Confederacy then, accept the Great Law of Peace. Tanasadage was one of the first communities to accept the Great Law of Peace. And that's why I'm proud to come from that. In spite of all the bad stuff you hear about us, that's why I'm proud to come from there. Because the Ganawida was the peacemaker. We have a law. We have constitutions. And they have more moral, spiritual obligations than any constitution in this world. The Royal Commission in 1996, how many of you know about the Royal Commission? How many of you even read the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples? There's volumes of it. 5 years, a commission went around Canada talking to Aboriginal people and asking them, what's in your heart? What is in your mind? What do you want to say to us? It was at that time that people started talking about the residential school system and the abuses that they had. And in 1996, 1996, the Royal Commission came out. And it said, they recommended that negotiations be based on, this is Glenn Plains, be based on a relationship that respects the concepts of coexistence and mutual recognition. Angela Pratt, in her treaties versus Terra Nullius, reconciliation, treaty making an indigenous sovereignty in Australia and Canada, she said, colonized peoples face a terrible dilemma. They could stand on their rights for full and fair decolonization and wait. But that would require that they continue to withstand the devastation that comes with colonial status. What is most shocking is that we non-Aboriginal people who have benefited so much from the taking of First Nations land and the attempted destruction of their nationhood, allow the process of colonization to continue to happen, and that we, referring to non-Indigenous people, continue to reap always more benefits. Now, some of you may have been toddlers in 1990, but I think most of you here might have heard of it. And 21 years later, here we are fighting again to preserve our land. Because the government lied. Brian Mulroney, who was the Prime Minister at that time, lied, another conservative government. Because they do not respect our rights as human rights. They do not respect our collective rights. Nor do they respect anybody else's rights. Because if they did, they would have more of a stronghold on what the mining companies are doing, not just here in Canada, but right around the world. When you contaminate land, when you contaminate water with uranium, how long does it take for it to leave the environment?
A few tens of thousands of years.
They don't know. They're making a guess. Maybe 25,000 years, it'll be this isotope, and then maybe another 25,000 years, or maybe another million years. They don't know. And yet they are mining uranium and plutonium, its byproduct. And I remember going to consultations when I was with the Quebec Native Women, the Native Women's Association of Canada. We're meeting with the Nuclear Waste Management Organization. And they were trying to find a native community that would accept the nuclear waste from nuclear power plants. And they said they would bury it so deep into limestone that even if there was an earthquake, there was no danger of the containers being damaged. I want to read to you a letter from a doctor. She lives in Nunavut, and she is writing to Premier, Premier Ariel. This is dated this year, March 15th. And I'll just read a bit of her letter, but she is a physician. And she says, thank you for inviting the opinions of Nunavut uranium. I'm writing to you as a parent, a physician, and as someone who cares deeply about the future of Nunavut, I have not been shy to speak out against nuclear energy and specifically uranium mining. Part of my professional role as a doctor is to advocate for the health and well-being of the people I care for, and it is definitely my job as a parent to do this. As a member of Physicians for Global Survival, the Canadian chapter of the Nobel Prize-winning group International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Being wary of nuclear energy in all its forms comes easily to me. The College of Family Physicians of Ontario has called for a ban on uranium mining, as has CAPE, the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment. The provinces of British Columbia and Nova Scotia also have a permanent ban on uranium mining, because that is what their voting public has demanded. And you are the voting public. She goes on to talk about a uranium study at Jodagoda uranium study in India that found statistically significant increases in the rates of birth defects, cancer deaths, and premature deaths near the uranium mine. The isotopes and the tailings of any uranium mine developed in Nunavut could well add to our already high rates of cancer. Can we say it will definitely cause more cancer deaths? No. But one of the guiding ethical principles in medicine is first, do no harm. It is a precautionary approach that should be taken with all forms of development in Nunavut. And she goes on to talk about the illegality of developing nuclear weapons. And we can see in the tragedy that has happened in Japan at the Fukushima nuclear power plant that there is no technology that can contain radioactive disasters. You know, we talked recently about Chernobyl. We hear that on the TV. We talk about what happened at the Three Mile Island. And I want to ask if there's anybody here from NeoChem. NeoChem, Niobec. Because what you are doing is maybe you're getting rich now, but your offspring, your great grandchildren, they will not benefit. What's going to happen? And I don't believe for a second that niobium is the only element that they're going to be mining in Venezuela. They're going to be touching veins of uranium. And that is why we are afraid. That is why we want to stop this, because it will contaminate our well water. I have well water. I don't have a municipal system, filtration system where I get my water. The farmers who are using the water, they don't have anywhere else to go either. They are using water that is good, that is pure. It is water that has flowed underneath Mississauga for centuries. And I really hope that one day people will put aside their prejudices against the Mohawks, because Mohawks are kind of the nice scapegoat, eh, for the society. When anything goes wrong, the economy is going bad. The Mohawks, well, because they're selling illegal cigarettes.
Yeah, but the cigarettes came from the natives anyway. Like,
as you know, I worked in an Aboriginal organization for 6.5 years. And I can tell you the government doesn't listen to me. They just want to push their way through. They want to be able to protect the corporations and the companies that will give them payback, that will give them some kind of economic benefit. And we talk about jobs. We talk about jobs so people can put food on their table. But they don't tell you what kind of food you're putting on your table, right? It's a GMO product. Do we test that product if it's been contaminated? So there's many things that I think the government is not telling us. And NeoChem, you know, and I sometimes hindsight's 2020, but when I'm touching myself up there, I said, well, they haven't dealt with the Mohawk people yet. Well, you know, I apologize for my arrogance on that, because As a human being, I am tired of fighting government. I am tired of being another generation that is taking up the struggle to protect our rights as human beings to be able to live off the land that our ancestors cared for. When Europeans first arrived here, that the reason why so many people came over in so many boats was that the land was beautiful, it was rich, it was nourishing. Champlain could hardly move his boats down the St. Lawrence because there was so much salmon in the St. Lawrence River. Nowadays, we don't even want to fish in the St. Lawrence River. Has anybody ever eaten fish off the St. Lawrence River? You know, Quebec South? Yeah, you have. I congratulate you for your bravery, but one of the things that really bothers me is that each government department does not talk to each other. So the health and environment, status of women, all these government departments don't know what the other one's doing. So when they give grants for mining companies to contaminate and pollute the environment, Health Canada's looking the other way. And when Ramsey was talking about, you know, the government is saying no, and Neocan is not taking no for an answer, it brought to mind, you know, like that terrible boyfriend who you're out on a date with and you really don't really want to have a second date with, but he's not taking no for an answer. He's going to keep trying. It's like, no means maybe? No means no. No, you're not going to mine on our territory. And with or without people standing beside us, we are going to say no to that mine. Because that is where I come from. That is where generations of my people have come from. I am a Turtle Clan person from that area. And yes, I could go and move somewhere else, but I would not feel that I am of that land. An Indigenous people's identity is connected to the land. And when I was younger, I don't know if anybody remembers, I was Assiniboines. Does anybody remember I was Assiniboines? I'm much older than you, remember. But in the 1970s, 1975, 76, I was a teenager. And I remember in the Black Hills, on the territories of the Hopi and the Navajo, they were mining uranium. And one of the elders said, it's like taking the lungs out of Mother Earth. It is the lungs of Mother Earth. And I read recently, the UN is considering developing laws, and this is supported by the country of Bolivia, who have incorporated rights for Mother Earth, that the UN is considering this as well, which is great, is a great leaps and bounds from the time Thomas Banyanka, the Hopi elder, addressed the UN and told them to stop doing what they're doing. So it's really important that, and I know we have a politician in our audience, but I won't point him out because I don't want people to target him.
I've
seen him, okay. I remember David Suzuki saying this one time in a speech she gave at Concordia. He said, people should be proud to become politicians, because it should be an honor to speak for your people. And I think for me, people like Stephen Harper, Brian Mulroney, and some others have brought the definition of a politician so low that people don't want to vote. And I can tell you, this government has been not good to Aboriginal people. They undermined the UN Declaration at every cost and every turn before it was passed in 2007. They even tried to bribe African states and said, you have to vote for this or we will cut off your funding. And some of the African states even went to have a press conference to say that this was the tactics that Canada was using. You are the voters. Do you want reconciliation with Aboriginal people? I'm assuming most of you here because you're here to listen, because you're here out of interest. Reconciliation is the only way that we are going to get out of the constant fighting we have had. You know, if people think that barricades is a fun thing to do, then you better go sit on a barricade and find out exactly what it's like, because it is not fun. It's hard work. It may not seem like hard work, but it is. You know, you gotta sit there and you gotta make sure that nobody goes in or out. But reconciliation is one of the most important things that I think should have started after Harper's apology for the residential school experience of Aboriginal children. Commission said that Aboriginal peoples in general have not been consulted about development activities. Usually they have not been guaranteed, nor have they obtained specific economic benefits from such activities on their traditional lands. And they have had difficulty protecting their traditional use from the effects of development. And I can tell you that Indigenous people have always been dispensable in the eyes of the government. The first nuclear bomb was tested on the backs of the Navajo, the Pueblo, and the Hopi people. Judy Pasternak wrote a book called Yellow Dirt. Has anybody ever heard of that book? Unfortunately, I think it's only in English. It says Yellow Dirt, an American story of a poisoned land and a people betrayed. They never warned them of the effects of nuclear energy or nuclear waste on their lands. And to this day, in 2011, continues to devastate Navajo families with high rates of cancer and kidney disease, disturbing evidence of birth defects called Navajo neuropathy, which causes weakness in the muscles and nerves. And a good friend of mine up in Chisasibi, Cree territory, because of the hydroelectric dams, has said that children, there's a specific disease of Cree children, certain Cree children, which is called Cree encephalopathy. It's only found anywhere in the world amongst the Cree. We are killing ourselves for capitalism. We are killing our future for economics. There's 8% of the people in this world that actually make decisions on all our behalf. That's only 8%. That's why I say it's time for a revolution, for people to take back their voice, to make sure that there is equality and people are treated equally and respectfully, not just because they have a nice car, not just because they work for government, or not just because they're a big CEO in a multi-billion dollar company, but because they're a human being. And so I just want you to encourage anybody that you know, whether it's your professor, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your children's teacher, to get to know what the real history of Canada is, get to know Indigenous people. We are trying to undo the effects of colonization, the devastation of colonization on our people. We are trying to get back our children. 46% of children in childcare today are Aboriginal. We are treated, we are a minority. We are homeless in our homeland. It's time that we treat each other with respect. My parents lived in a time just after the time that their parents had to have a little piece of paper that allowed them to move, to get off the community, to work. I come from a generation, I was a child when the hippie days were going on, but I remember watching the TV and seeing, you know, from John F. Kennedy, I didn't understand at that time, I was really young. From John F. Kennedy to Martin Luther King being assassinated. And thinking as a child, how terrible it is that someone is killing someone just because they're black. And then realizing later as an adult that all those civil rights movement, all this peace and love didn't include Indigenous people. It's 2011 now, let's wake up. And let's live amongst each other in peaceful coexistence as the Tuna Wampum Treaty has said. Not according to Canadian laws, not according to the Canadian land claims policy, but the way it should be in a civilized society. Thank you very much.